This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
What is going on with this world, I guess, is the question. There is essentially a culture war that has stemmed out of the Lindsay Clancy trial. I didn't expect this. Honest to God, I thought this was going to be kind of a passing trial, not a ton of attention, but some of, you know, from folks who are in the true crime community. Wow, was I wrong. Lindsay Clancy's defense told the jury she killed three children. The prosecution agrees. Both sides, same fact. However, thousands of people on the internet had decided prosecution's wrong and the defense is wrong. They know better. It's something nobody sees. Nobody. They're just inventing shit. And a lot of people are believing it. How did we get here? Why are we here? That's what this episode is about. We're going to dive into this in three different chapters as we discuss the Lindsay Clancy situation. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us, as well as Robin Drake, as always, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's start. Both the prosecution and the defense agree. Lindsay is the one who did this. Her own attorney conceded this at the opening. Siobhan, how does someone watch this and decide that's a lie?
You know, this is an intensely disturbing case, right? Children dead, killed by mother. Mother admits it. This hits everybody, I think, in that amygdala, that emotional part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And people want a monster because we like these nice, simple narratives, you know, with the good guys and the bad guys. And this is not a case where you have a monster.
Yeah.
If you think critically and you analyze the facts, which I think are in front of us, the mental illness piece, it's not disputable. But people aren't thinking critically, and they're in their amygdala. They're not in their thinking brain. They're incapable of, you know, analyzing what has been proven here and what is false. And it's become this almost cult-like war, these teams. And I mean, I know there are people like us who are looking at the evidence and trying to put things together and taking notes and being careful in how we give opinions. But this amygdala-driven rage where people are projecting their own histories onto, you know, I do see that there's this trend now, particularly on X, and which I don't really follow, but it's been pointed out to me a lot, where men are going after Lindsay as the monster that they want to see tortured and killed. They don't understand mental illness. And a lot of women now are going after Patrick, that Patrick is this evil, malevolent monster that drove Lindsay crazy and somehow managed to kill everybody and throw her out the window, you know, and it's crazy. It's crazy. But in truth, both sides are exactly alike in the process of what they're doing. And when you ascribe malevolence to a monster, anybody that doesn't support that side, they become a monster too.
Yeah.
And so it's not just we have a difference of opinion. It's you're evil too. Mm-hmm. And so while the case testimony, of course it's emotional. Of course it's disturbing. We feel upset about it. But what has been really even more disturbing to me is watching this war go on where people are saying such incredibly vicious, vicious things about Lindsay and about Patrick. And in truth, this is a case, there is no monster. It's mm-hmm. like Lindsay's brain was broken. copious amounts of evidence about that. It's not in dispute if you understand anything about mental illness or psychology, which shouldn't be that hard to do a bit of reading and understand it. And we talk about it all the time, as other podcasters are talking about it. But people don't care, and they're not listening to the evidence. So I don't see Lindsay as a monster. Her brain is broken. She did a monstrous thing. She acknowledges it. She wants to be dead because she regrets it so much. Patrick, I think, did his best. I'm giving my whole diatribe here, but you know, families do not know how to manage mental illness. And I've seen that kind of severe mental illness. They're not equipped. They don't know what to do, and to then turn Patrick into the monster because, he wasn't supportive. I mean, we heard from her mother. Her family was supportive. Patrick was supportive. But the big flaw here was the incredible lapse in the treatment providers, and that well documented. And yes, I was telling Robin earlier, I definitely, you know, got my 26 legal pads full of data now. This could easily be another book if I wanted to punish myself by writing a book, which books are not fun to write. So I don't know that I'll go there, but I'll be putting more on Substack because that's kind
of. I love your pieces on Substack. And Siobhan, Tony and I talked at length about some of the causes and reasons behind the emotional breaks, the amygdala hijacking that's going on in society. And some of it, like, you know, from evolution of our species, you know, we are very good for our survival. We have to make quick judgments, quick assessments, and react quickly for our safety to preserve life. And so you can see snap judgments coming in. But you would think over the evolution of our species, those kind of snap judgments without critical thinking would have been flushed out, because that's when stupid happens. That's why I was drawing comparisons for everyone this morning. That this parallels, you know, I mean, just think about this. Years and years ago, if Lindsay had done this, she wouldn't be on trial and psychosis wouldn't be being argued. She'd be being exercised for the evil demons that were possessed her body, because we don't, when as a species, when we don't understand something, we make up stories and make up fables. And since no one understands this, they're making up all these amazing stories, you know, just like they don't understand thunder and lightning, so we're going to invent the god Thor. You know, all these things is exactly what we do. What's preventing people from taking a breath and taking in more data and information? It just doesn't make sense to me where people will lock on so rapidly and not let go. It's like a bulldog bites down and they absolutely refuse to let go of these crazy, non-cognitive, non-thoughtful, non-critical thinking opinions. And again, critical thinking, interrogate your opinions, interrogate someone else's opinions. That's it. That's it. Just interrogate it. Just question it. What prevents people from doing that? You would think as an evolutionary evolved species, we would do that, but we're not.
Yeah, you know, when we talk evolution, it's tricky because I don't think we've all evolved to the same degree.
And different paces for different people, it seems.
We locked the nutters up in a cave and let them live.
You know, what I see going on, there's a lot of projection. And so one of the things that is happening, at least for some of the folks, is that Lindsay becomes every woman that's ever done me wrong, every manipulative woman, every dangerous woman. And now here's a place to target all my emotional baggage. And so it feels good to vent this rage. You know, people can get addicted to venting rage, which is super unhealthy. But I think that's what we're seeing. And then for every, not every woman, but the people who are involved in this tribalism, every abusive, narcissistic, unkind man that I've ever been involved with, here's my chance to vent the rage at Patrick. So it's this affectively, this emotionally driven process, which is so intense for people. And then they get online and they reinforce each other, and they you know, go into the tribal identity. And it really is almost cult-like. It's like, we identify with our tribe now. So don't confuse us with the evidence, because they're just not interested
in it. Do you see it as an indictment against the mental health of our nation as whole that you're unaware of? I mean, I'm seeing every now and then you see a red flag here and a red flag there with someone who's a little deviation, you know, from the norm. But as I said yesterday, is it more than I was ever expecting? Because if they're treating this case this way and people in their lives like this, they're most likely treating a lot of other people in their life the same way, where they're jumping to rapid conclusions, causing a lot of drama, causing a lot of hate and discontent in their lives. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I don't know that if our country is any worse than any other country, because I think it's just probably a flaw of the human thinking process, the motivated reasoning, right? Where you have a strong opinion and then you interpret everything through the lens of that emotional opinion. You know, you're just not capable of thinking critically about it. But it's incredibly toxic. And as I say, watching all the evidence is disturbing, but watching this stuff is what makes my heart pound. And it also reminds me of QAnon, you know, when the crazy stuff going on.
I forgot about that. I wonder how many people are going off the rails here on this case and inventing things and going down these conspiracy routes are also the same folks who were involved in QAnon beliefs.
Would not surprise me.
Correlation or some
other. It doesn't take much.
I'm going to say there might be a string to cross on the evidence wall between those two. I want to talk for a moment about this, the projection that so many people seem to be doing here. And I get it in many cases. I get people looking at some of these characters we talk about, particularly when we're talking about like a narcissist, a borderline, a real toxic human being like Corey Richens, for example. Lori Vallow, she's nuts. But there's tons of horrible, narcissistic, monstrous women that we've talked about on this show, and men. I get almost excited to talk about them because I have personal experience with borderline personality. And yes, it's therapeutic to be like, wow, let me just unleash all this on you. But this is not that. She's not this woman that's this horrific, crazy. She doesn't have a track record of anything.
No.
There's no like months leading up to this of her trying to poison the husband or the children or a thousand other narcissistic crazy shit like Corey Richens had, where like the evidence is there. Yes, that is that monster. And same with Patrick. There's no evidence that he's this like selfish, narcissistic husband. People are jumping on this fact that the mother was there. She had actually, the grandparents were at the house helping take care of the kids. He went on a business trip to New York one time. Holy shit. He must be cheating on her with some mistress. And there's no evidence to that. And then they go to, well, he was married 4 months later. No, he wasn't. You're making that part up too. It was 3 years later, you idiots. Yeah. But the thing is, the facts come in, they absorb them, and then they become truth. And even if the facts then are presented as not truth, you're wrong. This is misinterpretation. This is just you taking facts from someone who's not giving you facts, but you already landed in those being real. And so they still sit there and they just keep repeating shit that they know is factually wrong. I don't understand. I guess I got kind of a tangent there. What my point is, I don't understand people projecting their shit onto these characters because they don't match the characters that people are trying to project their shit onto that one would think would be those people. There's plenty of people to do that with. These are not them. Why are people doing that?
Yeah, it's this non-rational part of humanity, you know, and I think we can look at everybody, including us, at times when we're emotionally driven and not rational. But most people, I think healthier people, can take a breath, step back and say, okay, why am I so upset here? Let me analyze this. Let me calm down and get my thinking brain in. But humans, you know, a lot of them, they're just not very good at using that thinking brain, and the evidence doesn't matter. Somebody wrote something on Facebook the other day that was very easily disproved and was factually incorrect. And I said, okay, take a breath, be calm, just speak in and correct and say, no, here's the fact. I could not believe the reaction just from that one person, but clearly enraged at me, because then not only is Lindsay, I mean, pure evil, if you try to say, but here's a fact, you become the enemy and you're purely evil too, which is crazy.
I want to just point out, somebody made a comment there and they were trying to connect the dots here on why people went to the, because people say, well, he's dating 4 months later. Again, that's pure internet conjecture. There's no fact that says that anywhere. And let me throw this into the ether. And let me also address this quickly. People who jump with the words, no one can, ... Wrong. Mm-hmm. You're just wrong. Mm-hmm. No one can get a divorce that quickly. I've gotten divorced in a month. I've gotten divorced within a few months. I've done it twice. Fast. It can be done. It's not an impossibility. So when people throw this shit, no one can do that. You're just fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. No, they can. They can easily. But that's not what we're even talking about. And let me riddle me this. The man's been through hell. The man's family was annihilated. His wife did this. He's trying to figure out what to do going forward. Yep. Heaven forbid the man finds a member of the opposite sex that he's attracted to and a relationship forms and they become close and it becomes romantic. Heaven forbid he have someone in his life to help him navigate that shit show, because Julian Ohio is mad that she got rejected on Tinder the other day. She's going to go, well, he shouldn't have that happiness because I don't. That's essentially what I feel is happening here. The man who went through hell found happiness at some point 3 years later, by the way, for the actual marriage, and the world thinks, well, that's too quick for me. What the fuck is that?
That's self-radicalization.
Yeah, it's crazy, because when a person has been wounded to the degree that this man was wounded, which, you know, I don't know that any of us can imagine how awful that wounding would be. I mean, to lose your entire family in such a horrendous way. And of course, he's going to have self-blame. And of course, this is going to be the worst thing he ever lives through in his life.
Yeah.
We all, when we go through a trauma, we need comfort. We need people who are going to help soothe our nervous system. And to, even if he met somebody 3 to 4 months later who was comforting, who was soothing, maybe started as a friendship, developed into love. I say that's a beautiful thing. That's a
gift. Yeah.
It's certainly what I did 6 months after, back in 2004, when my husband did the horrendous suicide.
Yeah.
I was broken. And I met my current husband, who was so kind. And
yes,
so
he is. We all met him. He is a soothing, you know, it's so funny you brought that up. Not funny, but just unique, because we all met your husband at Tony's wedding. And I got my goosebumps going, because he is a soothing soul. I mean, just being around, he literally, the way he moves, the way he interacts, you can see what the magnetism there was. It was a soothing soul, because he's just one of those people in life that gives comfort just by presence.
Comfort.
So time periods don't matter. It's what you need in those moments.
Yeah.
Is that a big projection on a lot of people, just their own unhappiness with their own partner, and how dare he find happiness? I don't know. I didn't even get why anybody's mad at him for finding happiness after this. I mean, and then people saying, well, he could have done more. I'm sure there's 1,000 things he wishes he would have done differently.
Can you imagine? Yes. Oh my
God. But you know what? You put, be in that situation and tell me how you would have acted better. You know, it's just, I don't know. It seems it's very deeply rooted in a lot of people, this unhappiness that I feel a lot of people really have. And I guess maybe that's what's surprising about this, is just how deeply viscerally this is affecting so many people in very weird ways.
Yes. Very sad. Is what it is. It's tragically sad. You know, every time I see someone reacting and saying some really batshit crazy stuff, you know, I don't get angry. like everyone else, not everyone, but these pockets of these self-radicalization people, because from all the cases that we've covered, Tony, you know, like assassination attempts, you know, like the Charlie Kirk assassination attempt, that guy was self-radicalized because he had these thoughts. He projected these thoughts, groupthink started, and they start escalating like this with the anger, the rage, and finally lack of problem-solving skills. I'm going to do it. You know, yeah. And that's how self-radicalization happens. These echo chambers of crazy just go. But being able to really think through it, talk through it, if everyone just got a little bit more curiosity going, mm-hmm. if you hear something that sounds like you either super agree with or even if you're super against, let's interrogate that information. Let's take a deeper look at that. What's that based upon? You know, every time I have an emotional response to everything, you know, one thing I started doing in the FBI, I found that if I got an emotional response to something, hey, here's a great experiment. It's time for a science experiment. Let's see what I observed that gave me that emotional response. And let's start interrogating whether it's based on fact, data, or my own emotional hijacking. What's my understanding of myself? There's so many questions you can start asking before you start jumping to conclusions. Mm-hmm. So just get curious. Gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section as we continue our conversation about Lindsay Clancy. The links are in the description. We'd love for you to continue the conversation there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The culture war over Lindsay Clancy isn't about Lindsay anymore and isn't about Patrick. It's about what happens when millions of people encounter a crime that won't sort into the categories their brain needs. Siobhan Scott is with us, as well as Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, to help us continue this conversation. There's a lot of people that watch our show primarily, if we're to look at the biggest piece of the pie, roughly 70 to 80% of our audience demographically is women, age 35 to 64. They're smart. They follow cases closely. They care about justice. It's not me being chauvinistic. That's what our stats are. That's who watches this show statistically. A lot of them are, you know, very much in the comment sections right now. Some of them are very well informed. Some of them are not. Everybody's coming from different places. And many are convinced they're nothing like the conspiracy crowd, even when sometimes they are. I find myself falling into that from time to time. Where is the line between following a case, though, and being consumed by one? Because let's take a step back from the case itself. People getting so invested into this, into such a way where, you know, it almost becomes religion-like. And you're going to take things, I think when you start taking things on faith, if you will, of facts that you don't have the evidence to, but you're presenting as fact, that's essentially a faith move, where I'm just going to repeat this because I believe the tribe to which I'm coming from could not mislead me, could not take me down the wrong path. They're going to shepherd me over here. What's that line between following a case and taking it to this level of consumption and being consumed by one?
Yeah, I think we're watching that addictive rage process where people are given that opportunity to work out every bit of pain or anger or misogyny, as we saw here, that this becomes an avenue for where do they put their emotional garbage. And it just becomes something, I think, when people can't stop thinking about it, when they notice that they're going around tense and angry, rather than, you know, staying in their thinking brain and just being kind of analytical and say, what can I learn from this? Or I'm confused about it. You know, I want to watch a bit of it here so I can learn something. When they're watching it for hours and hours and hours, and particularly focused on it in the middle of the night and feeling the need to attack people who are, you know, presenting evidence and have a difference of opinion, when it becomes so vituperative and hostile, they've crossed the line into something that's really unhealthy.
How do you self-recognize, Siobhan? I mean, because again, there's so many things I love about what we do on our show, you know, and it's as much self-help as it is analysis, I think, especially when we have you on, you know, and talking about this is probably the greatest case we've had where we've had so much mental illness going on, not just in the case itself, but all the surroundings of it. And it's hard to imagine because most, even the people that are self-radicalizing, I think in this, I'm going to call it self-radicalization because there's a lot of radical thoughts out there. I don't think people in general, if you are falling in that normal human behavior spectrum, want to feel this way. They want to stay up at night. They want to get over it. But if you're, if someone's even having that's tuning in, watching, and having a little bit of that own kind of glimmer of self-awareness, I was likening it to alcohol use disorder, or what they used to call alcoholism, and that is they start getting caught up in the cult of comparison because they're afraid they might be have alcohol use disorder. So they're saying, well, I'm not as bad as that. How many drinks are you taking? Well, I'm only taking three. You're taking five. I must be okay. You know, and so.
And neither of us are on the corner with the paper bag under the bridge. We're not so that bad.
So, all right. Yeah. So I'm not as bad as that guy.
Yep.
So if someone's having a glimmer of, I might have a problem, and because they're doing that and they're asking that question themselves, or people in their lives are giving a pokes, hey, man, you should turn off the TV. Maybe I'll turn this off. I mean, I'm sure all of us that are on the show get that from our spouses too. You know, as we're talking about this all freaking weekend long and doing texts early in the morning, not leakage on all of us, Tony, Todd. Yeah. But how do you start that self-heal? How do you move from the slight glimmer of recognition to, oh, shit, I got to really do something? And what's the first step they should take?
Well, yeah, I think for me, physically, am I getting a headache, right? Is my jaw clenched? Is my heart racing? I've noticed all those things this week because for these shows, we've got to watch a lot of the trial, and then we see the comments coming in, and it's disturbing. And so, you know, are you skipping meals, right? Are you getting some exercise? Are you eating healthy? People are so enraged and caught up in this and fighting online for hours and hours. What's your level of tension in your body? I think we all, you know, this sounds like a therapist talking, duh, right?
That's why we have you.
Yeah, you've got to pay attention to how am I feeling physically, and is this interfering with my life? And if you notice that, yeah, take a break. Focus on something else. For me, I have a dog. I got to get out and walk that dog in the forest every day, which is super healing. If you have an option to do something that brings you joy, because every day I think we all need to experience, it doesn't have to be big things, but we need to experience something that's making us feel good, that's bringing us joy, rather than leaving us in this state of rage and anger.
Do you think, I thought of baselines when you're talking about that, because we all have a baseline before and after events and during events. Do you think it would be helpful for people, again, if this is accurate or not, you know, or people could actually take a few seconds and write down what their pattern was before this case started, what you did when you got up in the morning, what you did throughout the day, and write it down, and then write down what you've been doing now. Mm-hmm. And then kind of have this awareness that, wow, my baseline has shifted. I need to recognize that. What do I need to do to get back to that baseline? And hopefully that was a healthier baseline.
Mm-hmm. I almost feel like, I feel like there is like this level of flailing going on with the crowd that likes to feel morally superior and righteous. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of people. I mean, I feel like there is an addiction, maybe that's the right word, maybe it's not, but there's an addiction that a lot of people have in this country because of social media to feeling morally superior over others. And they may do it over, you know, I make better stuffing at Thanksgiving. You know, it can be little things all around, you know, passive aggressive, covert things that really never add up to anything huge, but then they'll have their little opinions about things here and there. There's something about this case that's giving people that permission to feel fury, the moral superiority and purpose all at once. It feels righteous. It feels like justice is at work. It's 2 a.m. and they're still going. Is that addiction to the moral superiority really playing itself out here? And we're seeing it flailing because there is no clear villain to be mad at here. And when people dig themselves into something and they're always, you know, posturing themselves as being right or better than others, when they dig in so much and there's, I don't know what lily pad to jump onto next. Mm-hmm. They don't have the answer. Ah! And it becomes a show. It's like they're mm-hmm. don't know what the fuck they're doing. Mm-hmm. Is that really what's going on way behind the curtains under everyone's engines, who are just like, people are looking at going, are you okay? Are you okay right now? Like what you're saying doesn't make any sense.
I think that's a really good point. It can be kind of a compulsive behavior. You can use the word addiction for it. You know, we have behavioral addictions where people get caught up in something, they get the dopamine rush. And when you have this position that the other side, right, which is a position we want to get away from anyway, but when you do that, the other side is evil, then you start to justify aggression. And it feels justified, and aggression feels virtuous. And so you start to become, as we often see with religious cults, you're a holy warrior now. And you're going to fight, you know, and anything to win and to punish the side that's wrong. That's,
because it's righteous. Because it's righteous. Because anything else, we don't want to fight. That's bad. That's evil. But when we put the words righteous in front of it, well, suddenly you're a holy warrior.
Yeah. You know, and part of the, you said that great word, villainize, Tony, and people are villainizing Patrick. They're villainizing, obviously, Lindsay. How come, because... The thoughtful people on here are saying the system failed. How come no one is villainizing the system? I don't. That's what everyone's pointing it out. I think both sides are agreeing, the prosecution and defense, that the system was not working the way it should. Either they didn't diagnose her right, or they diagnosed her right. I mean, it's either way. It's that's the system that seems to be at play here. How come, and Siobhan, how come people are not villainizing the system on this one, or the institution of mental health for women, as opposed to going after people?
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is really tragic here, because this case gives us an opportunity to look at the problems in treatment. And I've been saying, if I used to supervise a lot of interns, if I were supervising interns right now, this would be the assignment. What can you learn from this case about doing diligent treatment and doing good treatment? And, you know, we've talked about that. You've got to exchange information with other providers. You've got to have longer visits with somebody who's troubled. You've got to keep people who are psychotic in the hospital longer. You've got to pay attention to what meds you're giving them and are there negative reactions to the meds. You've got to work harder. And so that's, I think, where the focus should be. And we all need to understand what psychosis is, how to recognize it, and how to reach out for help. And this is stuff that's not well understood in the culture at all. So this is the opportunity to learn these important things and do better, you know, all around.
And, you know, we talked beforehand, and I know people have brought up the comparison to the Andrea Yates case from years ago. And Siobhan, that's why you've covered that much more extensively than I did research the other day when Coffin Deffer brought it up. And the parallels between the two cases is staggering. It's staggering. And I remember what I read about the Andrea Yates case. People back then said this is a great case because it helped us focus more on the mental health issues women with postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis, and we're going to learn from this. Did we? It doesn't feel like it. Do you see any difference in how this has evolved in those cases? I mean, what's your impression of that?
Yeah, we didn't have everybody online back then, so I think we didn't see the polarization to the same degree. And I do think people that paid attention and followed it, there was a lot to learn, and I think people did learn. And hopefully, those are the folks. I remember following it really closely, and I learned a lot from following it closely. And, you know, that affected, I think every time I pay a lot of attention to these cases, because it's like, what can I learn as a clinician from this? But did it stick? And certainly younger people don't remember the case, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where, and, you know, there are a lot of cases that happen with most of the time when mothers kill their children, it's because they're psychotic. Mm-hmm. And they don't all get in the press. This one got news because it was multiple children. This was a family that, as we've said, appeared to be a lovely middle-class family. And so that got more attention. But there are a lot of these cases that happen, and I pay attention to them. But I don't think most people are paying attention. And I think there's a population that are and hopefully are learning from it. But we're just seeing the loudest voices from the people that are in this cult-like rage state. They're the loud ones.
Riddle me this, because this is kind of an observation I'm making as we're talking. The crowd that really seems to be avoiding the reality of the mental health conversation here, and just not even going down that road. It's too icky. It's just she's evil. This, all of that. That group of people that is doing that. A lot of people, you know, when they're very viscerally opposed to something, sometimes, quite often, it's a reflection of themselves. It's a projection of themselves out there for whatever reason. This seems to be flying too close to the sun for them. So we're just going to pretend it's not even a thing. Does that make sense that these are folks that maybe are a little more susceptible to be falling into a state of psychosis? Mm-hmm. That these would be the ones that would be the most vocal to pretend that is an impossibility and does not exist in other human beings at the same time?
Mm-hmm. And it certainly, whether it's psychosis or not, it can be people who have some mental health symptoms, who have erratic moods, who get into a lot of conflicts in the world because of their own internal problems, and they don't want to acknowledge mental illness because it's too threatening. Often when I meet somebody who's obviously got some problems, and I'll say, you know, people I meet socially that are very troubled, and I'll say, you know, you really, and they want to talk to me at a party about their problems. And I'm trying to say, you need to find a therapist, right? Because this is a party or a wedding. And, you know, I just want to be me here.
Who came to you for therapy at my wedding?
Who didn't?
Yeah.
Who didn't?
No, yeah. You had absolutely lovely relatives. Lovely relatives. I loved everybody I met there. But yes, people who have more problems tend to be the most resistant to looking at psychology and to look deeper and to ever consider therapy. They're the people who say, oh, I would never do that because I'm not crazy. Yeah. And so I think folks who say those things, I'm immediately suspect about what are they hiding and not looking at within themselves.
I think so. The closest to crazy are the ones who say that.
So since y'all brought it up, you know, me doing my stat research. So here are the numbers. There are roughly about 200 maternal-driven filicides a year in the country. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty big number, more than I thought. And out of those 200, roughly 55% are psychosis-driven. Yeah. But it's even a smaller number of that. About postpartum psychosis is driven even less than that. Yeah. About 4% they're saying out of that number. But at least out of psychosis driven, we're talking about 100 per year, 200 total mother-driven filicides. So the number's pretty high. So this case, it's getting all the attention, but that's the problem we actually do have in a mental health system, because that's still going on.
Yeah, very, very, very true.
Let me ask you this one, because I don't know that there's really truly an answer, and I've been trying to run this through my mind. All the folks who are going down the Patrick is evil route, and people are at different degrees on this. Either he's just narcissistic, or, you know, he did all this and he's whispering, you know, sweet, horrible things into her ear, and he's the voice. Let's just say that obviously none of that is true, because it isn't true. And this is everything played out as it did. We're just playing with facts, playing on the reality plane here. He gets married 3 years later. I don't know when he started dating the woman. We don't have actual facts on that, and I'm not going to base it off of TikTok. What would be acceptable to society for Patrick in his life after this post tragedy? Is there any existence he could live out that these people who found reason to hate him would be satisfied with, other than, I don't know, living in a corner shaking? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd want to see him suffering, constantly suffering.
Why? He didn't do anything.
I agree, but it's just this non-rational anger. And, you know, it's just like if he cries on the stand, if he were to cry, oh, look at that. Look, he's manipulating. If he's more stoic and reserved on the stand, because that's a defense mechanism, people can compartmentalize. And, well, look, he doesn't even care. And it's there's no way.
Whatever bias you want, it's coming in.
You know, people are mad that he recovered some money, got some money through a GoFundMe that a friend of his set up after all this went down to help with the funeral costs. How dare him? And then they conflate those numbers and screw up with, and then they present him as something that they're not. You know, I hope he makes a fucking $1 billion off of everybody who is calling him the killer here. I hope he fucking sues the living shit out of all of you. And Patrick, we have some lovely attorneys who are probably ready to help you if you need help. So feel free to reach out. We'll get you in touch. But holy shit. I mean, I'm all fine with everybody have opinions, but my God, this is just insane. Yeah. Utterly insane. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. All right. Siobhan's book. I do highly recommend going and checking this out. This is her memoir, Nightbird. Go read this. If you ever like, so many people love hearing you, Siobhan, and your insight into everything. If you want to know where all that comes from and her journey to here, this is the book. Go check it out wherever you get books.
And I highly recommend it on Audible, because Siobhan does an amazing job narrating it. I listened to it on Audible twice. It is a great, insightful listen. Very aware, self-awareness. You hear a great journey, great solutions, and actually gives you great context. When you hear Siobhan on the show, you can actually see her world coming together with the great expertise she shares. So I can't highly recommend.
And then everything she researched about minds of mass killers, because holy shit, this is another good one. So go check out that book too. Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books. Go check it out, audiobook as well, and leave a review on Amazon. That'll wrap it up for today. For all of us, for Todd, for Siobhan, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. I'm going to go take a big, deep breath. We'll talk again real soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.